drive your fancy cars? Do you think of me? 'Cause after all, I'm the one who's made all your money. Does the image of me rotting here haunt your sleep? Or are you living your dreams while you forget about me? I had dreams just like you, my wish for a better life.
And that was Sarah Marlowe from her album, World to Win, name of the song, Invisible Face. Welcome to Bathrop Spears Broadsides. You're listening to 101.1 FM and www.freakradio.org in beautiful Santa Cruz, wet Santa Cruz, actually. In the studio with me, I have two guests prepared to overthrow the entire psychiatric establishment of Santa Cruz. We have Janita Petrolli, who is HNPNCMH. Figure that one out, you're way ahead of me. Medical Director, Orthomolecular Neurochemical Rehabilitation. Cutting through the gobbledygook, just what and who are you, madam?
Hi, Robert. Thank you for having me this evening. I am the Medical Director for Shangri-La BioSpa in Costa Rica. It's a green mental health care center where we actually take people on psych drugs and get them off of psych drugs as well as street drugs, but actually the business is filling up more and more and more with psychiatric drugs because of the massive drugging today. And we not only detox them, but we test. I'm a nutritional biochemist. We do extremely thorough testing of the neuroendocrine system and brain chemistry, et cetera, find the root underlying cause of the mental distress that they were suffering, and then we move on to treat that with targeted nutritional therapy.
Hold it. I just wanted to know you were. I didn't want an entire commercial. However, you know, for all you Costa Rica-bound tourists who have a lot of plane fare to get down there, hey, jump on board and away you can go. Actually, I want to hear more about that, of course.
Now, actually, to be honest with you, Robert, I wasn't going for business there. It's just that it is a very, very foreign science to many people. I just want them to know that it is offered out there, not just by me, but that there is a way of detox and then rehabilitating the person's neurochemistry using nutrition and functional medicine. That's
really
what I
was talking to you about. Anybody in Santa Cruz has actually experienced this phenomena in the course of the show. Also with us is a local bureaucrat. What's your name, bureaucrat?
Not a bureaucrat.
Well, you're on a board, right? I mean, perhaps.
But I'm there to get information.
Ah, you're just looking for information.
I'm a teacher and a mother and a grandmother.
Aha. So are you a survivor of the psychiatric system?
I guess I am.
Are you still taking your meds?
I never would take anything, ever.
Oh, for heaven's sake. Well, have you been hospitalized in this county?
No, not me. My son has.
I see. And is he taking his meds?
Yep.
Uh-oh. So you are on the board of the, what is it,
Mental Health? Santa Cruz Mental Health Board.
Okay, what does that actually involve? What are their powers and what are their responsibilities?
Our responsibilities are to talk to the director and suggest things, make suggestions to her for the quality of care.
How much power do you actually have in terms of, you know, actually influencing the director? The director is what, Rama Khalsa? Or?
No, Rama is, our director is Leslie Tremaine.
And what is her role here?
She's director of mental health services and substance abuse.
Controlling a budget of how much?
I don't know the budget.
Okay. I mean, we're talking millions, billions, thousands
millions.
Here in the county.
Right. We have Prop 63. Prop 63 was passed in 2004. It's called the Mental Health Services Act, and it was written by Daryl Steinberg, and it's to transform the mental health system. It's supposed to be client and family-led, It's supposed to be not business as usual, and we're supposed to think outside the box.
Hardy har har. Mm-hmm. So how long have you been on the board?
For a few years.
And how many people are on this board?
There's usually 11. You usually have three people who are family members, three people who are clients, and three people who have knowledge and information. And so it'll balance out.
And what two ghosts who wander in and out? Or
yeah, they just have to fill. Those three have to be filled. And we have two veterans on our board. We have Bobby Ackerley and Guy Grant. We have two doctors. We have Dr. Denise Oslin, and we have Barbara Bentley. We have Joan McVeigh, and she's a retired special education teacher. She represents Scotts Valley, Mark Stone's district. And we have Ann Andrews, who's a MFT, a counselor. And Linda Wilhuson and myself. And we have an opening for the first district, which is John Leopold's district right now. And I'm really looking at why we need to have more clients to speak up. That's the problem, because if you're going to hear life experiences, you know, you really want to hear firsthand.
How long have you been on the board?
For 4 years.
And have you seen any changes in the mental health system as a consequence of board recommendations?
I have seen some slight changes.
Such as?
And that's because Prop 63 money wants them to do things differently.
Hmm.
So the clients are starting to get jobs, different training. They did send me to...
What kind of jobs, in the actual mental health system or jobs elsewhere?
In the system.
And by clients, you mean mentally ill-labeled people?
Mm-hmm.
Or people who are getting disability financing from the government, perhaps, at the same time? Or
probably.
How many clients does the mental health system serve in Santa Cruz?
I'm not sure of the exact amount.
Uh-huh. And I'm being a little sarcastic. I'm sure that some people surely feel that they are getting help from the mental health system. Should be saying to any listeners that the two of you are particularly, you are a, Janita, you're a strong and persistent critic of pharmaceutical treatments, use of phenothiazines and things of that sort.
Well, yeah, I am.
Obviously,
I have
you're
been,
off your yeah, meds, that's for sure.
Yeah, I actually have the capacity to be pissed. And happy too. I'm a nutritional biochemist. I'm a scientist first and a practitioner second. And I see under the microscope what these things do. I mean, you don't really need to see that to know that drugs injure as opposed to help and aid the healing process. However, you know, because people do become extremely symptomatic when they start these drugs. However, we have, you know, billions of dollars being spent yearly on all these ads and misinformation and sales science and psychiatrists telling the parents and families of these people that are in the system that those are symptoms of their condition. And it's not. It's symptoms of their drugging. A pill for a pill, a pill for a pill, for a pill for a pill. And so everyone is now convinced that, you know, just a couple of weeks on these drugs will cause any normal person to be extremely symptomatic. And then now they're convinced, you know, the psychiatrist is saying, oh, the condition's getting worse. See, they need their meds. I mean,
some more meds. I mean, some different meds. Let's add a couple more meds.
Right, right.
On the other hand, you do have patients who swear by these kinds of meds. And also there's, of course, the claim that these meds engage and help to control individuals who might otherwise be running rampant through the streets, pushing people off of subway tracks and so forth. That's the claim of E. Fuller Torrey in his book, The Insanity Offense. He's a big critic of the deinstitutionalization of the 50s, 60s, and 70s, where the population of hospitals was reduced from 550,000 in 1955 to less than 40,000. That's quite a reduction in 2006. I'm no fan of hospitals, but I find that's quite a drop. And it's interesting, if you talk to people who are, there are critics on the left and on the right of the current mental health system. You have people of the R.D. Lang-ish quality, then you have the Zazians. I don't know, for those who don't know, these are there are some writers who have for years consistently considered mental health labels to be illusory at best and really a sort of a license for psychiatric empowerment of professionals to legitimize their own profession. And I guess, I mean, there are people who legitimately want to help people with life problems, and so they put them into these categories. We've had on the show Robert Whitaker, who's written a number of books. His most famous one is Madness in America, I believe it is, or Mad in America, actually it is. And he was a relatively neutral person who had no particular feelings about the psychiatric system, but who noted World Health Organization figures that showed those people who didn't take medication in those parts of the world seemed to recover from so-called schizophrenic or life crisis or manic depressive or they're so crazy conditions at a much higher percentage than in a much better proportion than those in the Western world, but Western Europe and the U.S. who were regularly doped up. And so he began to research this and wrote several books on the subject. We've interviewed him on Free Radio. We've tried to get some of the critics or some of the supporters of the mental health system here to talk about it, but they do not want to go on the air for some reason. I guess if you're in power, why bother to defend yourself? You know, I mean, you don't need to.
Well, they don't like being challenged by me anyway because they know that I'm right and they know that I'm a scientist and I can back up what I say. I have 3 million years of empirical evidence, but also now clinical evidence. So I'd like to rewind back to, because it's a very, very popular thing that we hear, especially from those promoting drug use, that, oh, I took the drugs and it stabilized me, I feel better now. Mm-hmm. Well, I'd like to discuss that and clear that up. What psychiatric drugs do is they actually disable the part of the brain that is complaining. They disable the symptoms. They do not heal. You are not healing. And that's why drugs will never heal. They will only mask symptoms. And this is a very big problem because not only are you damaging your brain, literally lobotomizing the part of your brain that is there for a reason to report that there is something wrong, but that something wrong continues to go on unchecked. So your lifestyle, whatever it is in your lifestyle, your environment, if you're chemically sensitive, there's going to be no changes to get any healing done. So then when you do decide to get off of drugs, if you ever can decide to do that because they are extremely addictive, you're going to have that problem's going to be expanded and exploded and more grave. And in fact, because of the oxidative stress and the damage that drugs do, combined with that problem continuing to manifest, is why so many people are coming up with the diseases and obesity, diabetes, cancer, et cetera, that these drugs are linked to. So they're not better. You know, of course, they're feeling better because their brain is now canceled out, that part of their brain. And these things do cause brain shrinkage, brain tissue damage, oxidative stress to the brain, reduced blood flow to the brain. It's not the answer to you know, our epidemic mental health issues. And, of course, I do acknowledge that we do have them. You know, the world is very toxic today, and it is causing people to be very symptomatic. But, you know, addressing one toxicity issue with another toxin is not the answer.
So what about your son, Jenny? Is he finding the drugs helpful for him? Is he a...
No, he feels like the whole system is corrupt, you know.
But he's still taking these medications.
Right now, he is.
And what kind of medications are they?
Clozapine.
Here's an example. Was this an atypical drug, where that's a new category of drug as distinguished from the previous, I guess, the phenothiazines and the psychotropics of the 50s and 60s, like Thorazine and Haldol.
Well, they still use that today. A lot of people are taking that.
Still?
The big seller right now is the Risperdal. They want everybody on Risperdal.
So, I mean, I know there's been a huge explosion in the last decade, according to Robert Whitaker's studies, of the amount of pharmaceuticals being prescribed. And I think tonight it may be that Attorney Jim Gottstein from Alaska, who's been suing to allow Alaskan clients or victims of the mental health system up there to be able to choose whether they want to take this medication or that. I mean, some may feel they do want it, but that's fine. But they should be able to say yes, say no, say what are the risks, you know, what's the least restrictive alternative, and so forth. He may be giving a call in. And for those of you who want to call in and ask questions of our guests or make comments on this subject, you can. I'm going to give you a number that's a little unusual for my show, but it's to enable us to catch a call from Jim Gottstein if he calls in from Alaska tonight, which he may do, or he may not. He may be busy. I'm not sure what he's going to be up to. But The call-in number for this show is tonight, 469-3119. 469-3119. Area code 831 for those of you in Costa Rica who are trying to call in. 469-3119. You are actually here, are you not, Janita? I got the Jenny, I got Janita. I'm going to get everybody straight here. For a kind of a shindig that's happening on Sunday, a day-long green health fair, green mental health fair?
Green Mental Health Care Day, and we actually just got an offer. Santa Cruz has given birth to yet another cause movement that's going to promote positive social change. We just got an offer by CCHR to go national with a national
CCHR
campaign.
Is the front group for Scientology that also is
No, that's incorrect.
I'm sorry. Isn't that a Scientology-based group?
No, or? It's not a Scientology-based group.
CCHR
that's a common misunderstanding.
CCHR is, give us the full name.
I'm a commissioner for CCHR, and I'm not a Scientologist.
That's good. Well, not necessarily, but right. I mean, I have known some people who are Scientologists who... Mm-hmm. They're good human beings as well.
I know some Christians that are good human beings. Too.
No, let's not go too far here. So the name of this CCHR group
I'm a
is.
Reverend, I get to.
She's got her own. She's got her diploma. She's going to baptize us here. So CCHR is the Commission for the Cumulation of Human Rights or some such
California
thing.
California Commission.
It's a Citizens Commission for Human Rights.
It is, however, regarded by some as a front group for Scientology.
But
you know
that's
that.
That's a very incorrect assumption, yes.
Okay, so we can go into that at some point. I indeed have amassed some information on that, which we can attempt to pillory you with later.
I do not qualify or disqualify people's religions. That's not what I'm here to do. I'm here to help people get off of psychiatric drugs and get them well.
Right, so you're not yourself trying to audit anybody at the moment.
No, actually, you know what?
Audit is a term
used by us. Because I really think that people, if we're going to win this, we actually have to stop looking at the divisions between us. Who's Jewish? Who's Scientologist? Who's Christian? I'm all of them. You know, I graduated the School of Judaism. I'm a card-carrying ordained minister. And there's a lot of Scientology about me, too, I guess. You know, it's like I do things that they do. They're human, you know. So there's a bit of me in everybody. We need to stop looking at how we differ and look at where we are similar and get on with life and move on. Because your life will be a lot better off, and so will the world, when we start looking at what we have in common as to how we are different.
So this Costa Rican clinic that you are a part of, the Shangri-La Biospawn Clinic down there, how old is it?
It's 18 months old now, and I'm also the director of patient services for Alternative Meds in Sedona, and they're going to be celebrating a 3-year anniversary and many, many successes.
And I told you I'd be grilling you on the show. Mm-hmm. You're not getting funding from any Scientology-linked groups?
No, actually, I spend a whole lot of my personal money. Nobody funds me.
But you're a lot of fun, that we can see that.
Yeah, I fund everything, and I have a lot of people helping. You know, there's a lot of very, very passionate citizens here in Santa Cruz, such as Jenny here on the board, really, really working very, very hard for 4 years now to get some changes, change the universe in Santa Cruz for the patients here, such as her son, so that, you know, because people can't afford the type of care that I provide. That's why I'm here to help out as well. I know Jenny. I love her dearly. I love her son dearly. I see what they're going through. I see what so many people are going through.
Well,
here.
That brings
it's
me to
insanity.
A question. How much does it cost to let's say do, I don't know, I'm an alcoholic, I have an alcohol problem, I have a heroin or a methamphetamine problem, I have a Risperdal problem because I want to come off Risperdal, and all these are, you know, addictive drugs that have significant effects if you come off them too abruptly, you know, and you have to find some way past this, you know, this withdrawal thing. What's the cost of an, obviously it's different in any case, but are we talking thousands of dollars to do this?
Yes. Do not get on drugs. It's extremely expensive to get off of them, and your insurance does not cover it.
Well, that's nice advice. However, so for my audience, which is homeless and or poor, really, you don't have any services available to them. Is that accurate?
No, there's only one of me and about 60 million people in the U.S. that need my services. That's why I have started the Green Mental Health Care Movement and the Green Mental Health Care Day. We're mobilizing people in that day because I can't do everything myself. So what I'm doing is getting this county to abide by the laws and, you know, the conditions of Prop 63, such as Prop 63 is supposed to be reforming the mental health care practices. They're supposed to, I actually read, they're supposed to be getting rid of the people that aren't doing well and don't have positive patient outcomes and implementing new alternatives for people. There are absolutely no alternatives to psychiatric drugs in this county offered whatsoever. And why? We have a conflict of interest here. Bob Johnson, the head of director of patient services for the county, is a psychiatrist. That is a conflict of interest.
And that's unlike other counties where the head of patient services is not a psychiatrist?
I'm not sure, to be honest.
Because that would be the question. Because maybe other counties don't regard it as a conflict of interest. But you say there are other counties that do have alternative avenues
absolutely.
Open.
Absolutely.
But we don't know if the heads of those services are psychiatrists or not. But in any case, Bob Johnson is the key person who could change this by
exactly.
a stroke of the pen.
I challenged him. I did a lecture at LaVie when LaVie was open, and many, many very concerned county workers were there. Thank you very much. And we need them. And there are very good, well-intentioned people out there that want to see change. They want to go to work and get some satisfaction and see people get well. And they want to offer alternatives. People know. They know intuitively, if they're not scientists or just common sense, that feeding people right, nutrition, exercise, Tai Chi, these type of things that are implemented, by the way, in Sacramento very successfully at a fraction of the cost. They want to see these things get in. So anyway, at that lecture, and I always do this when I get on the air.
This will be on Sunday.
I challenge.
This is a previous lecture you're talking
okay.
about.
Okay. Yeah. No, this was a while back. Yeah. I challenge any psychiatrist, Bob Johnson himself, any psychiatrist. I will take two of their patients on drugs for more than 2 years, more than two drugs. So this is a fairly the more serious cases, they call them. And I challenge any psychiatrist. I want there a couple of people. I'll take them to my clinic, and I will get them off of the drugs and stabilize and experiencing good mental health within 3 months. Not one person, not one psychiatrist has taken me up on this challenge, and they won't because they know I can do my work. They know
it's right. Let's turn actually the stats of your success. And if you have any comments, by the way, please interrupt my tirade here, both of you. You know, you've been working at this clinic for 18 months. How many people work at the clinic? How many workers you got down there?
I have people. I have it varies, to be honest. It's a well-staffed clinic. I have an MD doctor to cover my ass. Because I'm not legally.
Dozen people, 40 people.
Pardon me?
How many people are on staff?
Probably about 15, 20.
And how many clients do you serve at any one time?
12 at the most.
And what's their average stay?
A month to 2 months.
And what's the cost for that average stay?
Well, before I go into cost, can I go into the process? Because it's not a rehab. It's not what people are familiar with.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And here, people, listen to this if you're struggling, because this is how it's done. We receive the patient. I'll make it quick. We receive the patient. We do a complete detox before we do any neuroendocrine or brain chemistry testing. Doctors that do testing, because everybody's getting on the bandwagon, oh, I want my brain chemistry tested. Unless you are completely detoxed, those tests are completely useless, all right? You're wasting your time, and the doctor doesn't know what he's doing, okay? So because sugar, caffeine, donuts, all this stuff, if I look at you wrong, I can change your brain chemistry. So it's a very controlled environment that we test the person's baseline bio and neurochemistry. And we have to even get them off of the drugs in that period of time for at least 3 or 4 days to completely clear the system in order to get a true baseline read on what the person is deficient in and what's causing the problem. Low thyroid can cause depression. Low thyroid can cause suicidal behavior. Adrenal fatigue can cause what's called bipolar. So anyway, once the person's completely detoxed, and we use adjuvant therapies such as cranial electrical stimulation, infrared sauna, lymph drainage massage, juicing, meditation, holosync meditation, yoga every morning. We have a full suite of services to help initiate the growth, the healing process. Then, after we test, we provide a very targeted nutritional therapy. I practice orthomolecular medicine. Actually, Dr. Abram Hoffer, who is very well known for clearing schizophrenia and even extremely difficult cases, wrote the foreword to one of my books. and endorsed my therapies. And so basically what we do, and oh, by the way, to make the transition, the withdrawal, that much comfortable for the, more comfortable for the person, as we're detoxing them, I actually have formulated nutritional therapies that actually do exactly what the drug is doing in the brain for the person, and it will do it naturally. So as the drug's leaving, the supplements are taking effect, and there's very minimal transitional discomfort.
And you're going to be talking about this at length over the eight-hour
Green Mental Health Care Day.
Yes,
yes,
fair,
we are providing
Sunday
solutions.
And where is that going to be?
It's going to be at the University Inn. And
the Holiday Inn.
Right, exactly. And yes, we're going to have speakers. It's going to be a problem solution format. We're going to show people the truth. This is actually a day of you receiving the information that you were supposed to receive in your doctor's office to abide by the laws of informed consent. What are the risks of psychiatric drugs, and what are the benefits of alternatives? Well, I'm going to have my day, you know, and my people, the green team of this county here, the very brilliant practitioners that we have here, stating our case and how we can get the job done better at a fraction of the cost for the county.
Is this your first such presentation here in town, or have you done this before?
Oh, I've done it before. At Levy, I did a lot of lectures at Levy.
Right, and this is the first Green Day,
This is the first annual Green Mental Health Care Day. And I do want to mention that, you know, we do have support. The city is hungry for obvious reasons for this information. And there are going to be one of the aspects of this movement is for change. It doesn't end December 13th, a Sunday. We're going to be mobilizing people. We're going to be giving you all the information that you need to have in order to write your supervisors, to call it supervisors, you know, and tell them you want change, you want alternatives. We're going to mobilize and get this system changed here in Santa Cruz County, so when people come in with any kind of mental health issue, they are given an option of green, non-toxic, non-harmful treatments as opposed to drugs or the drugs, but the risk and benefits of both, and be served by a green team.
How much of an option, what percentage of the Sacramento mental health system actually involves green treatment, or is it simply a minor aspect to it? You mentioned Sacramento.
I'd love to talk about that for a second, because that's one of the things I use as proof. And in fact, I came to this city 3 years ago when my daughter started college here at UCSC, sharing this information. And it's 3 years later, and no one's done anything about it. That's why I had to rally up a whole Green Mental Health Care Day with 400 people to do it. But the Sacramento Drug Court over 10 years ago, I think it's about 15 years ago now, it has a system where if you are caught with drugs or alcohol, you get into a problem with drugs or alcohol involved, and there's no felony other than that involved, you qualify for drug court. Instead of AA, psychiatry and all this, that they would typically throw you in the system and start treating you for drug addiction with yet another legal drug to mimic it, its evil twin. What the system's about is they give you nutrition for a year. Oh, by the way, for a year you get this treatment, and at the end of the year you graduate. They drop the charges. So, and what the treatment is entails is nutrition, cooking classes, Tai Chi, acupuncture, EFT, counseling, all these great things,
EFT.
And EFT, emotional freedom technique.
Which is what?
It's a physiological technique. I don't practice it.
So this is routinely done to everybody. They go into this nutritional.
Absolutely. Uh-huh. And what they have reported over 10 years is, and you can go on the web and find this, just type in Sacramento Drug Court, but what they have reported over 10 years is the recidivism rate, and that is the return offenders, dropped significantly, a huge drop. I forget what the percentage is now. But people, they actually cleared mental health because they consider addiction a mental health disorder, which it's not. It's addiction, neurochemical adaptation. But anyway, they clear this. They clear the addiction problem. The person is well, not on any drugs, legal or illegal, and back to work, being a productive member of society, et cetera, et cetera. So, and by the way, they do this at a fraction of the cost. So here's a system. And here's a system that brings people in, heals them, gets them well, and then sends them back into society as functional adults, as opposed to the system that's here in Santa Cruz, which is they are harvesting people to get in, them in the system, and they rarely leave. This is the problem. I'd like Jenny to discuss a little bit of her son's situation, because this is what he is a prime example of what seriously breaks my heart and makes me extremely passionate about this movement here and getting this going, because this kid had a drug and alcohol issue 12 years ago. He did not have bipolar and all this other stuff, and now the poor kid is disabled by these drugs and barely functional. And we're supporting him, the county's supporting him, and it's not his fault. He was forced drugged, okay? And so it's not his fault that we have to support him now. It's the system's fault. And they're just making bank at the taxpayers' expense and killing our kids.
Let me just understand this for sure. Pharmaceuticals are not being used at all in recommendations by the Sacramento Drug Court. Is that right?
Not to my knowledge.
That's interesting. So, Jenny, getting back to you, neglected as you are over there in the corner, you are, you're part of the power structure here in town. I'm not sure how much power you have. Could all of you recommend that old Bob Johnson be booted into a different position if he wanted? I mean,
I don't think it's fair that we have, if you have a problem, and, it's just like a surgeon likes to cut you and a psychiatrist likes to give you medication. We need a person who's going to evaluate you properly, the way everybody wants to be treated.
Right.
I asked the Board of Supervisors the other day. I go, right now we're in the midst of building another locked unit here.
Oh, really?
$5 million coming from Dominican Hospital, $3 million coming from the county, and they said they've been doing the study over the last 2 years, and when I went, Sylvia Karras, who has been on the board before, she's been in the...
And on the show as well.
She's been around here over 40 years. Mm-hmm. She was not very happy to hear that they're doing these plans without really talking
to us.
Well,
what's the story on the Dominican psych ward, or whatever they call it these days? How many, has it usually full up? Is it usually vacant? What's the deal? Do we have any stats? Do you get access to these stats as a member of your board?
I don't. Their contract is ending in 2014. So they're planning in the meantime to build another place. But the problem I see is they have a step down called the Crisis House, which used to be called Tea House. And so they're trying to take away less beds from Dominican Hospital, from the Behavior Health Unit. But, recently a client who was at the Crisis House was one who was committed suicide.
So how many beds are available in Dominican for, warehousing people that they want to hold on 5150 involuntary commitments?
I think there's 16. I'm not really sure of the number, but 16 or 18.
And are they usually, the question I have for you is your board monitor this in terms of how often they're filled, how many complaints are made by clients that they're being held against their will or inappropriately or not informed? How many complaints of forced drugging? Do you get any access to this kind of information?
I haven't. Usually they have the ombudsman, which is contracted by the county.
Is that George Cavallo we're talking about?
Yeah.
Boy, he never changes, does he?
No, that's the problem.
I haven't heard too much from George, and he doesn't seem to return calls. I don't want to put the old guy down because I'm older than he is probably, but who knows. But what are the reports about George? Is he considered to be a vigorous advocate who stands up for people, or is he...
In some cases, I have seen him, but in my own experience, I haven't. I didn't see him as an advocate. When you go to the behavioral health unit, the first thing they say to the client, if they're over 18, they go, you have a right not to share the information with anybody else. And you can decline, you can put your parents on it or a friend or somebody else. But I see when people are being, my observation, this is a real clear observation, is when people are being medicated and then they're asked different questions about, are they asked to sign a release of information or who can you share it with? I think by the time they get in there when they're having a crisis, they're really not clear what they're signing.
What's the significance of signing that or not signing that?
Well, it's a big significance. If you Say if you're 18 and you don't want your parents to be involved, you can just not put them on the list. And you, so you could get medicated with something, and they'd know nothing about it.
And that's something you think would be positive or negative?
I think it's important to change that to an older and another till like till you're 25, because I think when people, you know, a few cases that I've seen, that if you're involved in the mental health system, I think it's better to have family support as far along as you can.
I like to extend that to 150. Someone should have someone, a loved one, a friend, anyone overseeing their treatment and involved in it.
But aren't families often the NAMI, National Association for the Mentally Ill, oh, drug them up, doctor, please, groups?
Well, that's a front group. NAMI is a front group.
Well, what I'm saying is that families are often, you know, more easily persuaded of the efficacy of psychiatric drugs. I mean, I don't know. I mean, often people get into problems with their families, and having a family on board might not be the loved one that you want, you know, to be sharing your information with. I don't know. I mean,
or even a friend, lately, you know, but I think that someone needs to be there to protect the interests of the person, because let me give you a story. I married two guys when I told you about this, Robert.
At the same time?
Or? Yeah, two guys. I'm a reverend, and I married two guys in the psych ward here at
Dominican.
Oh,
you weren't married to the two guys. You married the two guys.
No, at the BHU. I married two guys in that
45
days that 45 days that gay marriage was legal. I actually married two guys in the ward. To help get this kid, well, I mean, they were in love and wanted to be married anyway. We just figured it was the best time to get them married, because what had happened was the kid was picked up and he had been taking mescaline. And I do know, because I know these people personally, that, you know, it was experimental. But if it's experimental or not, drug addiction should not be considered a mental health issue, and then, you know, carting people off to the BHU unit at Dominican. So, but anyway, this kid was
BHU is
behavioral health unit. That's the psych ward. Mm-hmm. And so anyway, this kid was carted off there, and of course the machine started, the 5150 machine. They have 72 hours to evaluate the person. And of course, you know, he's drugged up, and then now on their drugs, and they're asking him questions, and of course he's out of it. So they're sitting there building his their case to 5150 him, and of course when they found out that he had great insurance, that was a good thing. Anyway, am I pausing here?
Let's pause here briefly. So hi there, caller. We're interrupting one of our guests in order to put you on. How are you doing? Can you hear me? Can I hear you? Hang on here. We're not hearing you yet. Let's see. Hello? Hello? Are you there? Hello? Okay, caller, try calling back at 831-427-3772. I apologize. It looks like this damn line is going to be dead again, so we're only going to have one line into the studio, but that's how it goes. Back to the exciting marriage ceremony on the psych ward. Go ahead.
Well, so what they were doing, they were literally isolating this kid. They truly think that they're bigger than God here, because as in just a short 3 days, the parents, because the kid was gay, they figured his dad was a federal marshal, so the dad, of course, thinks he's sick anyway and needs to be drugged, so everyone's pro-drugging him. They're building their case. They find out he's got great insurance. That's not a good thing when you're in a psych ward. And so I saw that the wheels are turning toward a 5150. And
this
by
is
the
an
way,
example of why I think parents aren't always the best person to have your information.
There you go. So what happened was, as soon as they said that, then this kid had absolutely no protection. And by the way, I know him personally. He has absolutely no psychiatric issues at all whatsoever. Regular kid on the street, and, you know, had a home, and I don't mean homeless. But anyway, so as the days go by, you know, I walk in there, and of course I brought some supplements, and boy, I tell you, the cameras, I guess there was cameras, because I went to give them some supplements to try and detox them, and the nurses charged the room, and anyway, I married them, and they violated the BHU.
With or without the supplements?
Without. They took the supplements away. They let me give them an organic salad.
We're getting a call again. Let's see if we can do anything here. Hi, you're on the line. I don't think you're on free radio yet. Yeah. I see. If you're talking about, we're doing some on-air work here, folks, in case you're wondering. But stay with us. In fact, I think what I'm going to do is play a little music while we try to work out this little technical problem. Don't go away, though. We'll be right back.
How can you sit there and look us in the eye? You say you're fighting tyranny. Well, that's the biggest lie. You say that we're no experts, but I know what's right from wrong. I never heard of anyone making peace with their bombs. Blood on your hands. How do you ever sleep at night? Blood on your hands. How do you live with your
was Blood on Your Hands, of course, Sarah Marlowe's songs from the Struggle for Global Justice. You tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, www.freakradio.org. Try the old call-in number at 831-427-3772. That's probably going to work, 831-427-3772. And if you can hear me up there in Alaska, Jim, if you're actually listening on the internet, do try calling on that number if you have something you want to add to the conversation, 831-427-3772. In the studio with me is Janita Petrolli and Jenny Gomez, who are trying to add some alternatives for people who are facing life crises and getting drugs as the solution to their problem. We were talking about this case on Dominican where you were allowed to be the chef, but not to provide nutrients, or at least not pillage nutrients.
So I will make a long story short. So anyway, he was well on the road to being incarcerated at the unit there. We did not get him married and transfer next of kin to his new husband that then requested him to be pulled out. He would probably still be there today, drugged up, which is commonly what happens, or maybe not specifically in that unit, but elsewhere in the system, completely drugged up. Once we got from the judge an order to have him out within 72 hours, which is supposed to be the case, the police showed up to try and get him out. They told the police to go away. I called as his clergy and asked to be able to see him. They would not let me in as his clergy. They shut everybody out, and this is wrong.
Now, is this because of sort of standard bureaucratic obstruction, or did the federal marshal father have some impact here?
No, I don't think so. He's a federal marshal in Arizona, so what impact could he have in California anyway?
Well, Jenny, have you heard problems like this happening at Dominican and your role as a member of the mental health board?
Well, I did experience one time there was a senior there. And I observed, I came to visit a client, and I observed an elderly gentleman. He spoke with the psychiatrist, and within 13 minutes, he's tried to give him an evaluation.
We're gonna bring in the caller, but I want you to continue. Hi, caller, you're on Free Radio with Ginny and Janita. Hi. You there? Can you hear me? Calling all callers. Hello, hello. Oh, this is not good. This is not good. Let's see. Let's try again. Hi, can you hear me? Hello?
Yeah, this is Jim.
Hey, Jim. Sorry, I think that was my fault. Let me let Jenny finish what she's saying about the board and her own experience with difficulties and complaints from clients, and then we'll have you talk. Is that okay? You with me?
Yeah.
Okay. Go ahead.
Okay, well, I was watching a gentleman. Well, I wasn't really watching him, but I had my eye. I could see that he was talking with one of the doctors. And he said to the doctor clearly, he says, you know, I was just in a serious car accident a year ago, and I'm lucky to be alive. He says, if I take any of these medications, I won't be able to function. And because he was from another country, they thought that he was... they didn't understand that this man was, you know, culturally, they didn't understand the man. And this gentleman asked me if I would go to the court with him to give him support. And I went to the court, and then the court is like, you know, the hearing that they have.
You don't mean the actual judge, I mean the in-hospital,
yeah.
I can refuse medication, the Reese hearing.
Yeah, and one of the nurses, one of the head people said, oh, you're so-and-so's mother, aren't you? And I'm thinking... hey, I'm here to support this man. I don't care who's, you know, I'm here because this man asked for support. And so I went and gave him support.
Was he able to decline the medication that he wanted?
What he did was they wanted to put him in 7th Avenue. And I said, no.
Which is a kind of board and care
absolutely
home.
Absolutely not. This man is not going there. And I suggested that to his children because he was a Rotarian and his wife died from diphtheria because they traveled so much. And so his children, you know, his daughters were a lot younger than him, and they really didn't know their way around this system. And I said, your dad should not go.
So you've gotten some complaints, and that's one specific one you're talking about. Let me roll over here to Jim. Hey, Jim Gottstein, how are you?
Super. How about yourself?
I'm good. Thanks for calling in. Are you having a warm weather up there in Alaska?
Oh, yeah. I think it's almost 20.
Oh, well, there you are. It's seasonable. Have you considered sunbathing?
We've got ice fog rolling.
I guess you don't have much sun in the winter up there.
Correct.
Well, you're a man who's been working on a number of lawsuits. The website is psychrights.org for those who want to check out Jim's website. You've done some important work in establishing the right of informed consent up in Alaska and have advised other states and folks in other states how to possibly proceed along that path in New York and California. I'm still waiting for the California pioneers to, you know, plow that field. You have a specific project you're working on now, right?
Yeah, I didn't want to step on your guest's toes, and so I had something to say about this issue of excluding family members. But if I may first, the big thing that we're really working on now is this massive drugging, psychiatric drugging of children and youth, especially in foster care and otherwise through Medicaid, and that it constitutes, in a majority of the cases, Medicaid fraud. And we have a lawyer, and anybody can sue on behalf of the government to recover the fraud and share in the recovery if successful. And we've set up this model complaint where former foster youth can sue their doctors.
Now, why is it Medicaid?
Prescribed it to them, and then the pharmacies.
Jim, why is this Medicaid fraud? Explain that to our listeners.
Congress authorized Medicaid only to reimburse drugs, outpatient drugs, for what's called a medically accepted indication. And that means it has to be an indication approved by the FDA, which means, you know, on-label. And it's off-label, it's only reimbursable if it's, quote, supported by one of three compendia. And there's, for example, anyone under 18 who's given Geadon in the last 6 years and got submitted to Medicaid, it's Medicaid fraud because there's no medically accepted indication for Geadon to anybody under 18.
Have you won such a case yourself?
Well, no. I mean, there are a lot of requirements. We just got them going, and one of them is that they have to be filed under seal, it's called, which means in secret, and then the government has this chance to, to look them over and decide whether they want to, quote, intervene and take over the case. And so they kind of, and since they're secret, I can't really talk about them. But none of, let's say this, have popped up yet. So they're just in the first phases. And we have, I can probably say that we have, outside of Alaska, four states where people are interested, are pursuing this. We have a lawyer in Berkeley who's interested in doing it, and so we're looking for a former foster youth, or it could be a parent, who, was given these drugs and wants, it's technically called a relator, but it's like being a plaintiff. And it's potentially a lot of money, but that's not.
So this is a call in case anybody
is interested. The reason Psych Rights is interested is we think that once the docs start realize that they can be bankrupted by doing this, that it'll really put the brakes on it.
You've also been working on a new form of a mode of therapy, a new place for folks called Soteria Alaska, right?
Yes, it opened in June. In fact, it's modeled after this program called the original Soteria House, which was not far from there in San Jose in the 70s, which showed that an approach not that unlike what your guest is talking about in some ways.
But Janita Petrella
had far better results for people. Of course, then it just got steamrolled by the pharmaceutical juggernaut, we've opened what it's 2009 in Anchorage, Alaska is a little bit different than the 70s in San Jose. So,
for sure, although I guess do you have to go to Costa Rica to set up a clinic like this? I mean, or up to Alaska? I don't know.
Well, but you see, the thing is I have to be in Costa Rica. Otherwise, the red tape is such that I would never be able to get anything done with my patients. And also, I'd probably be in jail by now.
That's a good point. I mean, there's probably a very favorable environment up here for various reasons, and it was really hard and took I think 6 years to get the thing open. But there are people trying to do similar things around the country. And mindfreedom.org has a list of non-drugging programs and certainly non-coercive programs.
And so you yourself have been a psychiatric survivor, Jim, and you're not as adamantly opposed to psychiatric medication unconditionally. It sounds like you are, you got no use for psychiatric medication at all, right?
Absolutely. When you see what I've seen, how people, you know, diagnose bipolar, schizophrenic, all these diagnoses, and I see them get well and move on with life within a couple of months, no, I'm not at all. If you're on the streets walking around, you do not need to be drugged.
I think there's a very good argument to be made for that position, and what we're about is trying to help people from being forced to take it. People who want to take it, you know, it's like, well, we're not going to try and stop you.
Do many of the people in Soteria, Alaska take medication, or is it mostly nutrition and yoga?
Well, they're just
and
getting going. So
you haven't got a schedule. Here we have a possible consultant who can fly up and help you out here.
Right. Well, they actually have the original administrator for Soteria and stuff. So, yeah, they're working things through.
So I know that you've had some setbacks and you've had some victories up there in Alaska in terms of decisions that are important for people here in Santa Cruz. Although they refer to Alaska, presumably they could be replicated in, you know, Santa Cruz, or they could go to the Supreme Court and, you know, be applicable here. The right of people to choose the least restrictive alternative, to be informed of all the, you know,
risk and benefits.
Risks,
well, yeah,
and benefits,
and I think
side
that
effects.
Your guest's point about being the advocate, I mean, that's, from my perspective, the biggest problem is that these proceedings are basically kangaroo courts or shams. And the advocates are usually not on the patient's side, and they're ludicrous. And that people have all these rights on paper, and they're just violated as a matter of course.
Is that true here in Santa Cruz County, Jenny?
It's true. That's what I see. Because, you know, you're talking about the ombudsman, and I think, you know, they have their own agenda, and they talk it out together. They've already made plans without us. You know, if you don't have somebody to support you, you're lost. You can be lost.
And if you
and
do,
the Reese hearings, I understand, are not really court hearings, and you don't have a lawyer, you have an advocate, and I you know, and there are lots of challenges that can go, I think should go to the Supreme Court. There was a recent study, update to a study that this professor in San Diego did. About how long these hearings lasted, and, you know, they averaged like 3 minutes.
I mean, are you talking about the Reese hearings, or are you talking about the habeas corpus hearings?
They're actually, I think, the guardianship hearings. You know, they have these phony baloney guardianship hearings, and then they get these guardians appointed, and then they, quote, consent to the psychiatric imprisonment and forced drugging, and then that's labeled as being voluntary.
Is that frequently happening here, Jenny? Here,
it's true. It happened with me. You know, with my son, they said, okay, we're going to have a hearing. So we went, this is a couple, you know, I learned that you have to have an advance directive, you know, but to go back with one of my experience, I went over to the hospital. They had a public guardian there. They had the person who was the boss of my son's coordinator. My son's coordinator didn't show up. They had somebody else. I went there by myself, and they had already had their plan ready to go. And then the person who was a public guardian that day, when I called the next day to talk to that person, they said, oh, well, she's gone to another position. You're going to have to talk to this other public guardian. So I call the public guardian up, and he goes to me, oh, your reputation goes before you. I go, who am I? You know? And he says, well, I met you yesterday with your husband, and you live down the mall. I said, you know, that's not me. You know, how can you conceive who I am? And this is a very important issue. And you don't even know who I am. A paid public guardian. And he's saying your reputation goes before you.
So this was a guardianship hearing of your son.
Yeah.
So your son's under guardianship?
Right now he is.
And this is over your objection and over his objection.
And
is that right?
He didn't seem, you know, once you're medicated, you can't, you know, you really need that support. And my son wanted me for support. He did want me to be there. At this particular time that I'm talking about, my son wanted me.
But somebody else didn't want you to be the guardian.
No. And no. Well,
did he need a guardian at all?
I talked to him, after I talked to the public guardian, he said to me, oh, you can do it. And then being kind, I gave the information to his father, who hasn't been around him since he was 18, and he went and cried to the public guardian. The public guardian gave the guardianship to his dad.
Somebody who's
not even been there.
Hey, Jim, can I ask Jim a question?
Sure.
Jim, I have a question for you. I have something, because I can hear that you're as passionate as I am about the child drugging. And I have heard, I do not know if this is true, but I have heard from a good source that NAMI could be training, and we know NAMI to be well-funded by the pharmaceutical.
National Alliance for the Mentally Ill.
Yes, very well-funded by the pharmaceutical companies, by the way, estimates of about 75%. But anyway, that NAMI here in Santa Cruz County is intending on using, they're training people to sit in classrooms to monitor our children for mood and behavioral issues, to send them off for treatment. Also, that I just found out myself, you know, I'm a practitioner, not a lawyer, this is why I want to ask you, that schools get money for every kid that's on drugs, so there's a conflict of interest. But anyway, is it legal for NAMI to be training just Joe Blow, you know, just when I thought, you know, psychiatry couldn't get any worse, now that they're combining pedophilia and psychiatry, having people sit there in a corner and monitor ogre over our children during the day in the classroom to watch for mood and behavioral issues? Is that, and also they may be using Prop 63 funds to do this. Is this legal?
You know, I couldn't say without looking at it. I mean, anyway, I NAMI, which I call the National Alliance for Mental Illness, is there may be some ways to go after it, but you know, you'd really have to, I'd have to know more, and I just don't know the answer to that without doing some checking.
So how strong is NAMI in this county, Jenny?
It's pretty strong. But, you know, I want to make a compliment. What I do like about NAMI is that the people are coming together to share information. The county doesn't have a program where people come together to share information and parents get together. The NAMI program, they meet 10 times. When you meet and share information with other people 10 times, you're going to learn something. When I went to it, I felt, the advanced learning about having an advanced directive is really important. I thought that's really valuable, and I do.
I
like
found that the different NAMI affiliates can really vary, and some, you know, I really in a lot of ways quite good in the ways that, is it Jenny, that you say, but I've also found that if the affiliates stray very far from NAMI National's party line, and National finds out about it, they're squashed.
And what do you find about that, Jenny? Anything?
What do I find about what?
About any NAMIs that you like?
No. Come on, this is human nature. You know, people are going to be nice to the hand that feeds them, and there's agendas. What we need is true. It needs to be an entire paradigm shift. I'm not of the sort that feels that this is a reformable reformable system here. It is so corrupt from the ground up. There's so many billions of dollars. We need to start. It would be cheaper, and we'd all be better off to start fresh with a whole new system that's actually truly focused on positive patient outcomes, and that is it. And by the way, though,
I totally agree.
Thank you, Jim. It does. It is done at a fraction of the cost. The Kent County, Washington proved that it can be done at a tenth of the cost. Sacramento Drug Court, Eugene, Oregon just passed, I believe Mind Freedom was a big inspiration in getting this done, that now mental health care patients, they're urging that mental health care patients have choice and can choose alternative care. Mutual of Omaha did a study, a 10-year study, and when they released it, and they went in, you know, pretty much, you know, a convention like most people in those positions, and actually proved to themselves that they could save $6.50 to the dollar on holistic care. So we have better patient outcomes at a fraction of the cost. Why aren't we implementing these systems now? That's my question.
No. plus, we're creating this whole massive number of people that get put on the disability rolls that
exactly.
don't need to be there.
We have the same problems with psychiatric drugs that we have with street drugs. They are twins, and biochemically they're twins, and socially they're twins. We have increased car accidents, increased incarcerations, violence, murder, suicides. Every single school shooting that I have investigated and looked at has been and read that all of them are directly connected to psych drugs. And then people will say, I love this one. Well, you know, there's a, in fact, a NAMI person said this to me. Well, you know, that's why they were on psych drugs, because, you know, they're unstable.
Hey, wait a minute. E. Fuller Torrey says it's because they went off their drugs that they went crazy.
Well,
I'm quoting his book, The Insanity Offense.
And I, well, and that I, may be true.
And I yeah. And let me protect the interest of the, you know, the validity of this. And here we go. When you are on such as SSRI, and these are the big ones, okay, the reason why you're on them, well, if you're depressed, possibly.
SSRI, for those who don't know, is?
Serotonin reuptake. And there's nothing selective about it, but that's what they're called. And but anyway, here's the deal, and it's a science why they go psycho and why they, you know, they either murder or kill themselves, because and there's a biochemical reason, a proven reason, and this is if you have a condition in, such as depression, known to be associated with, not all the time, but mostly known to be associated with serotonin, then you take an SSRI, which damages your serotonin reuptake ability anyway. But anyway, we go on the SSRI, the root cause was never looked at, right, or fixed. So you actually, your serotonin continues to get lower and lower and lower, and then when you go off, you have probably zero in your brain now, because what little your brain is now making, you have zero, possibly. And that is actually, I've read many coroner reports, and it's established that a bulk of suicides, when they do brain tissue tests, for serotonin, there's like very, very, very little. I forget what the numbers are, but there's like zero to none in there. So that's the problem. You know, your body is, you know, damaged. You're not producing the serotonin. The root problem was never fixed. And then you're taking a drug that helps keep what little is there going. And then you go off the drug. And, yeah, absolutely, you're going to have problems. So I do encourage, while I am a passionate green activist here, do not go off of psychiatric drugs if you're listening on your own. You know, greenbodyandmind.com here in Santa Cruz. If you don't have money, we will give guidance and we will send you to the right people that you can, where you can get support. So you know, I do staff that out of my own pocket, so that people that, you know, are trying to get off can get some help that they, you know, and whether or not they can afford, you know, there are people that will help out and at least get the right information, because there's a lot that
you give the website again.
Greenbodyandmind.com. You know, and really, if you approach this right with your family doctor, if you have that available to you, or any general practitioner, if you start looking at this as a look for the physiological underpinning, you can actually go to a doctor and start getting tests. Low thyroid, as I said, is known for depression and such. Whatever it is, look for the root cause, okay? And that's, you know, your best bet at getting well.
Well, I there's maybe some details I don't totally agree with, but one of the things that's really well established with respect to the SSRI antidepressants is that any dose change is within 2 weeks, I think maybe a little bit longer, is a period of time that there's a big danger of either suicidal or violent reactions, basically psychotic reactions. And by a dose change, I mean when you start them, when you stop them, or increase or decrease the dosages. It's very well established, and so I agree with that part of it. I mean, my experience that a lot of what gets labeled as mental illness is really reactions to people's, you know, what's going on in people's lives. I mean, people
normal
might,
stuff,
you know,
right?
Depressed, you know. I mean, people lose their husbands, and if they're not, they're still grieving after 3 months, they say that that's a mental illness. It's absurd.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to have to kind of wind this down. Jim, is there a particular, I know you made a plea, you're looking for somebody in the Berkeley area who might be willing to take on a, you know, might be able to volunteer for a legal case. You mentioned that before. You want to mention it again?
Yeah, I mean, basically, any former foster youth in particular that was given psych drugs potentially, you know, could be a plaintiff in a Medicaid fraud lawsuit. And should contact me, and you can do that through the website, psychrights.org. Or even parents and stuff. You can go back 6 years.
Sounds great. I'll catch you another time, Jim, when we have more time to talk about some of the details of what's happening up in Alaska and its significance for us down here.
You bet.
And thanks for calling in.
My pleasure. Thanks for putting me on.
Hey.
I'm sorry for stepping on you.
Not at all. I don't. My toes feel fine.
All right.
And the guest isn't complaining either, so bye-bye. So I had a whole bunch of questions to ask Janita Petrelli, whose name I'll eventually remember, from the Shangri-La BioSpa, who's going to be talking at greater length, or perhaps not. You're going to be talking all day, or you have a couple speeches coming up on Sunday?
No, we have Gwen Olson, who is a former she gave up a $200,000 a year plus job as one of the top paid drug sales reps for the country. She's going to be here in from Texas to speak about the inside reality of how these drugs are being pushed and criminally pushed onto people and through doctors, lying to doctors, et cetera, et cetera. We're going to have, and then, of course, our community practitioners. We're going to have Dr. McCollum speaking. We're going to have Dr. Monteith on. We have five branches, Spa Fitness, New Leaf.
It starts at 10 a.m. on Sunday at the Holiday Inn in 3 days. And it's online in case you want to read more about it at indiebay.org/Santa Cruz. Look in the calendar for more information. I'm going to give you some quick questions in the last few minutes before the two of you get shoved out the door. You can hang as long as you want, but I'm going to go into some other stuff. You're welcome to stay as co-hosts if you'd like. I was going to ask you, have you yourself ever had any psychiatric incarcerations or problems? Did you ever use psychiatric medications, Janita, yourself?
No, I haven't. Not legally. When I was younger, the sky was the limit. You know, I'm kidding.
You were a Haldol freak, were you?
No.
Okay,
I have tried. I tried doing it. It was a while. You know, I'm a kid of the 60s here in the Bay Area. We tried everything.
Now, you've written a book on alcoholism for those who want to check out your book. Essentially, you deal with alcoholism through therapies other than Jesus loves me and I'm an alcoholic and
it's an orthomolecular treatment that's actually endorsed by Dr. Abram Hoffer, who worked with Bill Wilson, who was actually a very passionate fan of orthomolecular medicine, but when he was even shut down by AA, by the physicians of AA regarding orthomolecular medicine for his fellow AAers. And yes, it has a tremendous success rate.
Okay. What kind of services are available for folks here? You say that if you want to go off drugs, contact the website. But in terms of alternate therapies and alternate medications, there ain't much for poor people. You're going to have to sort of go eat cantaloupe or something.
No, okay. A good place to start to understand thoroughly what you need to do, the right way of doing it, is to go to Green Body and Mind and download a free pamphlet there, How to Get Off and Stay Off Psychiatric Drugs. And that will get you going. It's a strategy. I do not prescribe, but it's a strategy. How to interview and find the right doctor, what to look for, and also the process that the doctor should follow. Many, many doctors are very open to following the practices that I advise them, and I will talk to doctors about if a doctor calls me and has a patient and wants to know more about helping them off of psychiatric drugs, I will absolutely give them my procedures to do it right and how to monitor the patient.
And you are, of course, most of the time you're in Costa Rica or running around in other spots, right? Sedona, ski lodges, who knows, for heaven's sake.
All work, no play.
No, none of that stuff. But you, Jenny, you're here all the time. You're stuck with the poor folks. Is there something that the mental health board might actually do other than nod sheepishly
I'd like to have everybody come to the meeting. We have a board meeting the third Thursday of every month. And it's at Building K. And if you need a ride, just give me a call and I'll pick you up.
What time is that?
It's usually from 3 to 5.
And what kind of how can people reach you?
464 3554, and I'll give you my email.
Okay. What is that?
GoGinny at Hotmail, GoGinny at Hotmail. And if you need a ride, I'll pick you up.
So, again, the phone number is 464-3554, GoGinny at Hotmail.com. That's the third Thursday of every month. That's coming around, isn't it?
Yes.
Are we at the third Thursday yet? Is this the third Thursday?
Well, I think we have holiday. We're going to meet in January.
So in January, the third Thursday. What do people expect from this group? Are you going to have a bunch of people? You get to sit in the audience with your hands folded, or what's the deal?
I would come and say, you know, whatever you want to share, whatever questions you have, bring them forth. And I suggest everybody come to the Board of Supervisors meeting. Find out who your supervisor is and say, hey, we want alternatives because we have an alternative town. We just have people meeting
over
there.
What specific program for alternatives are you suggesting that people get behind? Is there a program that you're putting forward? Maybe there'll be more talk about it at this Sunday green fair, a green mental health fair.
Green Mental Health Care Day.
So maybe that's where people can learn more about it.
Well, I mean, we could simply start by following what's already been proven to succeed. Let's follow our capital, Sacramento Drug Court. Let's get it done. Implement the same policies, and let's start there.
So Bob Johnson could tomorrow change all this? He's the head doc involved.
He could tomorrow change all this. But actually, what I'd like to see is a functional medicine integrative doctor that oversees a board of talented practitioners in various disciplines that are proven to help mental health issues and really develop comprehensive therapies. Like Ginny was saying, have a caseworker, a knowledgeable caseworker that can put together a comprehensive therapy for a person with the best of advice from, have an acupuncturist
right.
on the board.
What I'm looking for, though, is a program that people can immediately, like a four-sentence thing that they want from the Board of Supervisors or the Health Board or Bob Johnson, that they can actually, demand by simply calling a phone number. And if enough people call, they'll start putting some pressure on people.
That they want green mental health care, non-toxic, non-invasive, and non-addictive mental health care strategies implemented in this county.
Now, you did mention when we spoke on the phone a couple days ago, a couple of things. You said that Santa Cruz County is second to Humboldt County in the number of suicides and number one in teenage suicides.
Yes, that's what my research thus far has established. However, the only numbers that I could get was up to, I believe it was 2003. And the psych drugging has gotten a lot worse since then, so I don't know, it's probably even higher.
You mentioned a kid on the railroad tracks who burned himself was...
Right, he was on Haldol. And he actually, the combination of antipsychotics and Haldol, antipsychotic and antidepressants is actually Gwen Olson, who's coming to speak. That's what happened internally in her family. Her 19-year-old in-college niece was on this drug, and she actually ended up burning herself alive because of the withdrawal wasn't carried out right, and she wanted off. So I'm sorry. Question?
No, you did. I simply mentioned that you
right.
had brought
well, you know,
this
they
up
blamed
earlier.
It on the kid that he had. Okay, I have two. I have two things to say about this. Elliot was his name. They say that he had a disease. Well, he was in treatment, I believe, for 12 years or something. Well, obviously, if psychiatry is supposed to be any good at this, it wasn't very good for his case, obviously. But I venture to say that he didn't actually. This was directly caused by the drugs that he was on, not by any psychotic condition that he was suffering from.
A difficult thing to prove either way, though.
Right, exactly. But you see, the numbers are in it. This is so common; it's getting very, very, very irritating, to be honest with you. I mean, I don't know how many people have to die of this. And Bob Dylan's song, how many people before the cannonballs stop or something, before these pills stop being dispensed. How many people, we've gotten so numb to children being, a three-year-old dying of prescription effects, or come on. There's no ethics here, okay? How can anybody ethically look a child in the eyes and give them a toxic drug, of which the child did end up overdosing on by her prescription? So how many people have to die, before people wake up and get things changed
and
around here?
Folks can come in, of course, for only $10, or if you're a veteran or you're homeless or... What, you're a senior or you're a psychiatric survivor? If you mention, Uncle Robert here, you get in free. That's going to be at the Holiday Inn again, 10 o'clock in the morning all the way till 6 in the afternoon on Sunday. That is, of course, my prime show time, so I kind of resent you're taking over my time. But I guess I'll have to deal with it. Jenny, is something you want to say?
I was going
to
suggest call 454-2200. That's the Board of Supervisors. Find out who your supervisor is and write them a letter and make sure you CC me. Go Jenny at Hotmail. So we have a copy. And I suggest you write to Bill Monning and Smidian because, you know, he was concerned about the Zoloft in the water. Go in there. Maureen's ready to listen.
Yeah, Maureen's great.
And if you're missing any of these addresses, phone numbers, or if you want more information, if you give me a call, I'll try to steer you back to these Scientologist propagandists who are filling our airwaves with questionable behavior.
Hey, I'm from Innerlight.
And we've got nuts all over the airwaves here. But, hey, isn't that the beautiful Santa Cruz? And, of course, E. Fuller Torrey so far has declined to appear on this show, you cowardly dog, you. Thank you both. Stay in the studio if you want. I'm going to go do a little music, do some more business, and continue with my usual ranting and raving and playing street interviews and such. So don't go away, everybody. Stay tuned.
Thanks, Robert. Thanks for having us on. God bless everybody. Take care of yourselves and try and stay off drugs.
Except, of course, for the right kinds of drugs.
Yeah, right.
Say no to drugs.
Hey, you might want to light up here before you take off.
Dead like a dog, and the scary things that they did, what they are trained to do. Cold winter's night doesn't mean the same to everyone. No vacancy sign, not just inconvenient. He died in his sleep, it doesn't mean it's not murder, but at least they say that nobody knew. It's just another accident, they'll say. I won't swallow that pill. There's a method to this madness. Capitalism kills. They call it a war, but we call it survival. Fists and stones are no match for their guns. If it's a land without people, and tell that to the parents of the children killed in a place that they call home. But it's just a misunderstanding, they'll say. I won't swallow that pill. There's a method to this madness. Capitalism kills. It could be. Profits comes before saving people. Well, the only thing I know is things have gotta change. Cause it's just another.
To win, and that particular number was Capitalism Kills. I think it was. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Yeah, Capitalism Kills. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, www.freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norris. This is Bathrop Spears Broadsides. That was only supposed to go for an hour, but, you know, there's a lot to be said there. And psychiatric survivors and folks with alternative therapies need to have their own few hours on Free Radio, I think, and I hope they do get that together, because there are times available for folks who want to do that kind of a show. And if you want to, go to the website, www.freakradio.org. That's the Free Radio website. Download an application. Give me a call if you want some help, 423-HUFF. I'll advise you as to how you put together a tape, and then you present that to the Free Radio folks here and probably get a show on there. You got to kick in $30 a month on rent or do some work, and, you know, that helps to defray the cost of the station. We have to pay for our space, and then we appeal to the community for equipment, and that's, of course, you can always help us out, all you people out there in the community. Give a call to 427-4523. That's the voicemail line for Free Radio, 427-4523, and donate big bucks, donate equipment, give your thoughts. Got a public service announcement, we'll play it. Got questions, whatever you want, you can perhaps learn more information by going there. So, there were all kinds of questions. I was going to give Janita a full rousting on the Scientology thing, because I'm a little bit concerned that there's a lot of Scientology backing here, but that's not as important, I think, and she's pointed that out, as the basic issue that we're all working on. And even though Scientologists do have their own agenda, which is, you know, they're selling their stuff as an alternative to psychiatry. They're calling it spiritual religion. And I think it's a bunch of horseshit control profiteering, but that's not... I mean, that's a point for me, but I'm glad when people are exposing psychiatric abuses, even if they have their own agenda. But we certainly have to recognize that that can happen. Mindfreedom.org is another good website to go to if you're interested in alternatives to psychiatry and fighting back against the oppression of abusive psychiatric authority. Some interesting news they've had recently. They have a sort of a weekly show you can go to. Just if you Google for Mind Freedom, you'll find their website and their show. And actually, Jim Gottstein, who you heard earlier on the air, the Alaska attorney, was one of their recent guests. And you can download that program if you'd like. It's an interesting show. Irish newspaper covers campaign to stop forced electroshock. Mind Freedom board member Mary Madoc and her husband Jim were featured in a newspaper article by the Times about campaign to end forced electroshock. And there's various articles you can check out from Mind Freedom on this kind of topic. So I encourage you to check that out. Tonight, even as I speak, up in Fresno, and we've talked about this in earlier shows, Fresno activists are supporting homeless people by holding a press conference in which they are showing a video of how homeless people take over abandoned housing simply to survive. In Fresno, it's even colder than Santa Cruz, and the weather is getting pretty nasty and cold, as you know, out there. You can learn more about this by going to Google for Fresno homeless is one way to do it. And you can also go to indiebay.org/Central Valley. And again, if any of this is too fast for listeners, 423-HUFF, H-U-F-F, is the number to call. HUFF is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. Also, my phone. Give me a call. Leave me a message. I'll get back to you. 423-HUFF, area code 831. And I will try to repeat any of the information I've given out over the air if you need to have those contacts told to you more slowly. Lots of articles I was going to read. New report questions suicides at Guantanamo by Glenn Greenwald. On the night of June 10, 2006, three Guantanamo detainees were found dead in their individual cells. Without any autopsy or investigation, U.S. military officials proclaimed suicide by hanging as the cause of each death. and immediately sought to exploit the episode as proof of the evil of the detainees. Admiral Harry Harris, the camp's commander, said it showed they have no regard for life and that the suicides were not an act of desperation, but an act of asymmetric warfare aimed at us here at Guantanamo. Another official anonymously said the suicide showed the victims were committed jihadists who will do anything they can to advance their cause, while another sneered that it was good PR move to draw attention. Questions immediately arose about how it could possibly be possible that three detainees kept in isolation and under constant and intense monitoring could have coordinated suicides and then carried out group suicide without detection, particularly since the military claimed their bodies were not found for over 2 hours after their deaths. But from the beginning, there was a clear attempt on the part of Guantanamo officials to prevent any outside investigation of this incident. To allay the questions that quickly emerged, the military announced it would conduct a sweeping investigation and publicly release its finding, but it did not do so until more than 2 years later, when, in August 2008, it released a heavily redacted report purporting to confirm suicide by hanging as the cause. Two of the three dead detainees were Saudis, and one was Yemeni. They had been detained for years without charges. One of them was 17 years old at the time he was detained, and 22 when he died, and they had participated in several of the hunger strikes at the camp to protest the brutality, torture, and abuse to which they were routinely subjected. Perversely, one of the three victims had been cleared for release earlier that month. A major report from the Seton Hall University School of Law, this is the reason for this story, released this morning, several days ago, raises serious doubts about both the military's version of events and the reliability of its investigation. The report details that the three men died under questionable circumstances, that the investigation into their deaths resulted in more questions than answers, and that without a proper investigation, it is impossible to determine the circumstance of the three detainees' deaths. The 54-page heavily documented report raises numerous troubling questions, as illustrated by a couple of... it's a detailed report here. There's one way a meaningful investigation could be conducted into what happened to these three detainees. A lawsuit filed in federal court by the parents of two of the detainees against various Bush officials for the torture and deaths of their sons, who have never been charged with, let alone convicted, of any wrongdoing. Indeed, one has been cleared for release. These are the detainees. By itself, discovery in that lawsuit would shed critical light on what was done to these detainees and what caused their deaths. The problem, however, is that the Obama Department of Justice has been using every Bush tactic and inventing whole new ones to block the lawsuit from proceeding. As the Washington Independent's Daphne Evitar detailed in October, the Obama administration has surprisingly, that's a surprise for him, not for me, endorsed the same legal positions as his predecessor, insisting that there is no constitutional right to humane treatment by U.S. authorities outside the United States, and that victims of torture and abuse and their survivors have no right to compensation or even an acknowledgement of what occurred. And there's more on this story. Again, this is a long story by Glenn Greenwald. A new report questions suicides at Guantanamo, and that was one that didn't have time to read. Here's one called So Much for the Peace Presidency by Gene Healy, dated 2 days ago. This Thursday, Barack Obama, this is today, he will swing by Oslo to pick up the Nobel Peace Prize. That's a chuckle. Just over a week after he announced that he'd escalate the war in Afghanistan. Awkward. When Obama won the prize in October, we had to wonder whether the self-esteem movement, where every kid gets a trophy, had made its way from the Little League to the Nobel Committee. Gandhi, Mother Teresa, Martin Luther King Jr., and a guy running two wars who'd been president for 2 weeks when the nomination closed. Despite the committee chairman's defensive insistence that Obama got the prize for what he has done, clearly it was awarded for what the committee hoped he might do, which is rather like giving a physics Nobel to a guy who hopes he'll invent cold fusion. Well, if the committee hoped a preemptive prize would influence Obama's behavior, they must feel pretty silly right now. On December 1st, the former surge critic spoke at West Point defending his decision to throw 30,000 more troops into an unpopular, unwinnable, and unnecessary war. Sure, the president packaged the decision as part of a plan to, quote, begin the transfer of our forces out of Afghanistan in July of 2011, But that's not the beginning of a genuine withdrawal. It's an inflection point, according to Defense Secretary Robert Gates, at which maybe some handful or some small number, quote-unquote, will be able to come home. If we're lucky, maybe as many troops as the president just surged, but it's hard to envision, this is again a quote from Gates, that conditions will allow a further withdrawal behind that. No, it's another senior advisor. We're going to be in the region for a long time, says National Security Advisor General James L. Jones. That's not a popular policy. Nearly 70% of Americans in a new CBS News poll think that the war is going badly, and that the latest numbers from Pew show that the largest share of respondents favors a drawdown. Nor is it a wise policy. The president's speech emphasized, quote, the fundamental connection between our war effort in Afghanistan and the extremist safe havens in Pakistan. Well, yes, but it's not at all clear that we've helped stabilize nuclear-armed Pakistan by driving hordes of militants across the border. We have a caller. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, the beauty of it all is that he didn't even give the King of Norway the graciousness to attend the luncheon.
Well, my goodness.
Mr. Obama is not really very deserving of such an esteemed prize and needs to find himself again before he garners my vote a second time.
Mm. Well, I think, if you get fool me once, shame on you, fool me twice, shame on me, that sort of thing, right?
Yes, well, the best we can do is hope that he regains his senses soon.
I wouldn't spend much time on that one. That's like hoping that Bush will regain his senses. These folks are, they have their priorities, they have their advisors, and they've chosen their policies. It's up to us to change them.
They have the power and the money as well, yeah, so I guess. And not to mention the military. Oh, yeah, just in case we decide to revolt. Oh, well.
Well, I remember.
Thank you for your earnest service this evening. I really gleaned some very good websites from you, and I thank you very much.
Oh, I'm glad. And if you learn more that you want to pass it on to us, give us a call.
Okay. Well, I'm in Santa Barbara in a housing situation about homelessness, and we have a lot of psych students here. So the thing we're trying to do is definitely deal with all the people that are sort of over-medicated here. So thank you very much.
Sure. Thanks.
And God bless, okay?
All right.
I'll see you later.
Thanks. Bye-bye. Wow, Santa Barbara listener. Way cool. Not a lot of time left. Let's see if there's anything else I want to run by you before I try to get to the interviews, which, let's see what we got here. We've got Margot Kidder, one of my favorite actresses, Indiana Jones movies, Superman with... Christopher Reeve. She's also a political writer. She wrote Axe Max, and I'm not going to have time to read that, particularly since I'm giving priority to you callers. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
This is an anonymous member of the community who wanted to go to take back Santa Cruz, but received a message about it.
Oh, well, what have you got to say, anonymous member? I think you're referring to an event that's sort of slated for tomorrow, according to the Metro and the Sentinel.
According to the Metro and the Sentinel, but according to the founder, who sent me a personal note, hello, members. Unfortunately, due to cold and wet weather forecasted for Friday night, we are canceling our positive loitering event. Thank you all for your interest. We will be rescheduling soon and inform you of the new date. Take back Santa Cruz.
Aha. Well, that's useful information, anonymous caller, though frankly you're not as anonymous as you might be.
Yes, I am.
Well, perhaps you are anonymous. Thank you for the update.
Thank you for your show.
Oh, you're welcome. Bye-bye. So, yeah, that was something I was going to mention next, which is that Take Back Santa Cruz is a group that's concerned with, well, they... apparently, I have a variety of concerns, and anybody who's a member of Take Back Santa Cruz who wants to call in at 427-3772 should do so and give me your update as to what the group is up to. But they were quoted in the Sentinel as wanting to, do a demonstration tomorrow night at Taco Bell, generally that area around Pacific Avenue. And from the kind of the byplay on the Sentinel website, it sounded to me suspiciously like we weren't just talking about concerns with gang violence and safety downtown, but with the kind of support for police repression of homeless people and poor people and young people and folks who are doing such crimes as sitting next to a building downtown. And I'm not entirely clear about this. So Huff, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, was preparing to monitor that. We actually we enlisted Joe Schultz, who cooks a fine vegan soup, to come out and serve soup tomorrow night, and he's agreed to do that. But apparently the event has been canceled, so I think probably Joe will not be serving soup tomorrow night, but maybe we'll be following up on this another night and doing our own kind of get-together. It's illegal, for example, to serve soup in the parking garages. It's illegal to come out of the rain in the parking garages if you're homeless, thanks to the Coonerty Matthews Rotkin parking lot paranoia law, as I call it. They call it the parking lot, lots and garages trespass law. You cannot enter a parking garage unless you're going directly through or you're retrieving or parking a vehicle, which means you can't, for example, sit in your car and read, and you can't come out of the rain in the shelter, you know, from a storm into a parking lot. I'm as disgusted with this as you probably are if you're listening to it for the first time, and I think we may be doing some protests around it later. I also want to announce that on Sunday, that's in 3 days, at my morning show, which is longer than this, morning show goes from 9:30, sometimes earlier, to 1 o'clock in the afternoon, I will be having Mayor Mike Rotkin as my in-studio guest. So for those of you who want to query him on some of these policies which he's voted for, even though he's a member of the board of directors of the American Civil Liberties Union and a longtime supposed socialist up at the University of California, you can call him up, and you can of course you don't have to wait to come on my show. You can reach him off air. 420-5020 will get you Mike Rotkin tonight. It'll get you his voicemail. You can leave him a message that you think this is things have got to change in Santa Cruz, not just with psychiatric drugging and not just with the parking lot lots being suddenly been made forbidden zones for people to go in unless they are the owning a car, and even then only if they're parking or retrieving it, but other laws like the laws that make it illegal for people to sleep who are poor and who have no options, the sleeping ban, which makes it illegal to sleep after 11 o'clock at night outside or on much inside property. Unless if you're in a house or hotel, it's illegal to sleep in Santa Cruz, according to the Rotkin sleeping ban. I call it the Rotkin sleeping ban not because he created it. It came in 1 year before he was elected for the first term in 1979. It was passed in 1978 by the council that just preceded him. But he has supported it persistently. Anyway, Rotkin will be on the air, as I understand it, 10:30 Sunday morning for an hour. So listen in, and you'll be able to check that out. Now we are going to hear a few interviews from the streets, a little music, and then we're going to have Uncle Dennis from the Cream to the Dregs coming up this evening from 8 to 11. Stay tuned.
And it's 7:10 in front of New Leaf Market.
This is the Greyhound.
And folks are hanging out with two men with guitars.
Catching all the latest news, huh?
Trying to, yeah.
Hey, how's the gentleman off the record?
Off the record.
We're in the back of a pickup truck.
Report.
Come by late at night. Still big.
Somebody was throwing rocks. Where is this, up Davenport? Or?
All up the coast. All from the county line, from into the road to the county line.
So someone's throwing rocks through windows.
Pickup truck. With people in the back, it'll go by. Kid
Ridge and Bill Rock.
And this is at night or during the day?
At night, real late at night. Real
and you say that
night.
One individual had an injury, Brian?
Got a broken arm.
Brian got a broken arm.
Front windshield out. And,
busted front windshield. When did this happen, more or less?
About a week ago. There was three incidents in three nights.
Yeah. Wow.
And one of them, a lady had kids.
And do we think it was the same truck? Do we know it was the same group of
no,
people?
No, we don't. But it's
we
the same
know.
Kind of thing. It's a pickup that goes by. It's probably the same one.
Well, we don't want them kind in our county. You know what
well,
I mean?
No, that's just sick. That's pure evil. That's pure sick. You know?
It's the thrill of violence and the excitement of scapegoating and
yeah.
that sort of thing. You don't mind if I play this for free
no,
radio?
No, somebody's going to get hurt. He got a broken arm out of it. You know, plus he had to buy a new windshield. Yeah. You should talk to him. His name's Brian. He lives in a little Toyota Chinook. He's got a little bitty dog named Sarah.
Let me, if I have a card, if you see him, I'll get you.
I have your card. I'll give it to him. I didn't think about that. I'll give it to
him. Yeah, and in some cases, these kinds of injuries may not be reportable because those who are being injured have children and are afraid
exactly.
CPS may move on them,
yeah, exactly.
even though they're being menaced through no threat of their own.
Exactly.
No fault of their own.
Exactly.
So. Steve. I'm not going to say who, but we do have an anonymous report of a man who is one of the first casualties of the smoking ban. I'm sorry. We have another individual, another second anonymous individual claims to have the privilege of being the first victim of the smoking ordinance. Would you like to tell us, anonymous one, what happened in this case?
Standing there smoking, they walked up and said, "You're getting a ticket." I said, "Well, aren't we supposed to get a warning first?" He said, "Well, we can't warn everybody." And then today, right just an hour ago, a man in a business suit smoking a cigarette, they walk right past him, from me to you. And then when they're coming back up the street, four college kids walking this way smoking cigarettes, and they walk right past them.
Well,
so selective enforcement.
It's because of your white and attractive beard. They were drawn to you.
No, homeless people. Homeless people.
Now,
and then the other day, they told a pretty lady she couldn't smoke on the avenue. They can give them tickets.
Yeah. Now, do we know which cops we're talking about?
No, I don't know their names.
Officer Annoy gave us our tickets.
Ticket. But it's two different cops.
He was
tonight.
Very annoying.
He was very annoying, yes.
Annoying.
Yes.
So for those of you who are smoking downtown, let this be a lesson to you.
Sir Annoy, I'm not going to say what ne'er-do-well is giving me this report, but is telling people on the streets, or at least one individual, that you have to carry ID and show it when asked. Now, this, as far as I know, is not the case. And, Officer Annoy may be creating new precedent. Maybe he's a legislator in disguise, or possibly he's simply trying to throw his weight around, and I don't know what he's trying to do, but it doesn't sound right. Heard, Ann, from an anonymous source that the new 20-minute limit up at the Three Tree Lot, where Donna Dice had her arm broken by Sergeant... Sergeant Christian Lamas was the individual who neatly broke the arm of Donna Dice, out of Three Tree Parking Lot. But according to what I've heard from my source, the Three Tree Parking Lot, with its new 20-minute limit, presumably to stop ne'er-do-wells from hanging out. We have some good reports on that from locals, at least one local speed dealer who says that means the customers no longer look so sketchy and he's able to blend in. So there's a positive side to everything. Not everybody was pleased with the parade downtown. An anonymous critic had this to say. What he said was, and he doesn't want to be directly quoted, he had some questions about the huge amount of money that might have been expended with all the police and security and the relative poverty of the quality of the parade participants. Although I must admit, it was nice to see people dancing around and jumping and yowling and so forth, and that was good. But apparently there were three antique cars and a couple of fire engines or something. That was his description of the parade. I did not get to see the parade. I was busy trying to give away flyers to people with "I love the police" bumper stickers, which had a problem, which was a difficult
cast.
And I'm looking here on the sidewalk in front of the now unsittable area where Lincoln dead ends into Pacific at the Planter, and I see fragments of probably one, possibly two tickets, citations, or at least they're yellow and they look tickety. So apparently some people are littering with their tickets, creating even more offenses against the public. Well, there's another anonymous report. Has to do with the building. Is it a 2010 Pacific? I'm not sure of the address. It's a large building that was built, I think it was near North Pacific and
and River Streets. And this building apparently was zoned to have a commercial business only on the ground floor, but finagling has resulted in that being expanded to the higher floors, and the all the low-income housing was supposed to be involved, bought out or set aside. Is it true? Well, you call and tell me.
We do have the occasional multiple speed problem here on the tape recorder, but I will address that momentarily.
Call and tell me. Well, I'm down here at the drum circle, which isn't yet drumming. It's early, about 20 to 3. Hey, man. On Wednesday, is it the 8th or the 9th, Robert? It's one of those days.
Today is the 9th.
And I'm with Robert Blindbear Facer. Hey, Robert.
Oh, how you doing, Robert?
You have a drum in your hands and a hat on your head.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's what I have.
But do you have a song in your heart?
I imagine I do. I think everyone has a song in their heart.
Now, you were convicted, I say convicted, of twice sleeping, get this, sleeping in Santa Cruz city limits, once on the beach and then another time.
Both times on the beach, actually.
So one wasn't enough for you. You had to come back and do it again, didn't you?
Well, yes. I was trying to guard my boat, which was 100 yards offshore, which proved fruitless because the second ticket was the same day that somebody stole it. So I didn't have any problem convincing the police that I was really upset.
Did you ever retrieve your stolen boat?
Yes, I did. I found it later on that day. Someone had towed it to the beach, and they were going to haul it off to the dump.
Well, just trying to get rid of an eyesore off the coast.
Apparently. They tried to tell me that the sea lions paddled it in, but I wasn't able to believe that because the boat was at anchor and there was a loop in the line where somebody had apparently towed it from out beyond the buoy. So I assumed that someone had deliberately towed it to the beach and they were actually trying to confiscate it.
Is all I can say to that. Now, you were then taken to court, and in the court of Commissioner Kim Baskett, you were found guilty, 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 in spite of the good work of attorney Ed Fry, who was still trying to appeal your case, but apparently needs several hundred bucks for a transcript, which isn't likely to materialize.
This I don't know anything about. We're trying to overturn the camping ordinance because we believe that a law which prohibits erecting the Temple of Moses is against religion.
Now, wait a minute. The Temple of Moses. You mean slumbering being the Temple of Moses?
The Temple of Moses is a tent, and it is against the law to erect a tent in the city limits of Santa Cruz.
Well, I don't even think you were found guilty of erecting a tent. You were found guilty of nodding off after 11 o'clock at night, no?
I think I was found guilty of sleeping in between the hours of 8:30 at night and 11 o'clock.
11 and 8:30.
Something like that.
Yeah, 11 p.m. to 8:30 a.m. is my understanding of the sleeping ordinance. So have you been sleeping since, or have you been dutifully staying awake in order to stay legal?
Well, I've basically been...
this poor sleep-deprived guy can't even answer a simple question.
To turn around and say that I haven't slept since then would be a lie. I have actually slept. I've tried not to sleep during the night between the hours of 11:30 and 8:30.
11 and 8:30. Let's get our times right, shall we?
I've got it. Yes, 11:30 and 8:30. I have tried several times staying awake all night, but honest to God, you know, I may have dozed off.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that. You've got to keep closer check on yourself. Maybe you could hire someone to watch you, and if you fall asleep, kick you awake. No, wait. The police are supposed to do that, aren't they?
Well, I don't know.
They'll nudge you awake, you awake, perhaps.
Yeah, well, they're usually, you know, they'll shake you on the shoulder or something, you know, if you're really, really snoring. But
trying to help out in their own way. Help you out, so to speak. Help you way out.
Well, they're trying to keep keep us from having a birth here in Santa Cruz. There's certain things that a man must do one does not want to be made public, and they've simply attempted to do away with this activity, which is probably why it's fairly dry this season. When it's normally fairly rainy, you know, it's drying out a bit.
Now, what does the cut, you know, that have to do with the weather?
Well, it's just there's certain things that happen that coincide with rain. Now, rain is something that falls from the sky, but there's some correlation between men sleeping in the woods and it raining. I don't know how you would say that there's a correlation between that, but my experience over the years has shown me
the more you sleep, the wetter it gets.
The less heat you have on you, you know, when you're trying to get a place to sleep, the more the more places there are to do that, the rainier it generally is.
So the less police, the more rain?
No, the easier it is to find a place to sleep at night. You know, it's, in order
less police, the easier it is to find a place to sleep at night.
The easier it is to find a place that's warm and dry, the more rain you're going to get.
We'll have to ponder that one, folks.
Well, there is no place warm and dry in Santa Cruz. They have eliminated, they've wiped out all the brush. There's no cover.
And this causes a drought?
I do believe it might.
Well, let me ask you this, Robert. This is an issue that came up at the HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom meeting today, which usually happens every week at the Sub Rosa, 10:30 in the morning, every Wednesday. But Sub Rosa, for the unfathomable reasons, has been closed the last two Wednesday mornings, so we've snuck over to the Bagelry instead, which is about half a block between Laurel and Maple on Cedar, for those who want to come to our Wednesday meetings. But one thing that we did find...
However, it has to be said, I've spoken to some Sub Rosa officials, if you will, or collective members, and they're investigating the problem of the Wednesday morning closures of the Sub Rosa Cafe at 703 Pacific, the Anarchist Cafe, which some of you listeners may be familiar with. And if you're not, check it out. Cheap coffee for a buck. Often a friendly and welcoming atmosphere, depending on who's in charge at the moment. There are some controversies about some people there. I think Yellow B. Brown, a local African-American... I don't want to call him a street rapper, has been banned from the cafe. And he's had some problems there, which he's talked about on the air. I've gotten the response from the management about him that they think he violent, threatened the members of the Sub Rosa Cafe, pounded on the door when they told him to leave. And I haven't yet gotten back to Yellow Bee to get his latest side of this endless saga. And it looks like I'm not going to have much opportunity. We have a man with a wet umbrella who is making rude comments to a fellow Free Radio Santa Cruz Collective member. I may have to bring this up at the next meeting in order to discipline Uncle Dan.
When will that be? You haven't been to a meeting in months.
Well, weeks, actually. But nonetheless, I try to...
Before that, it was years.
I make my appearances, should we say, valued. Valued, yes, rare and valued. Anyway, so that's about it for this edition of Bathroom Spears Broadsides. Hopefully Uncle Dennis will have more luck with the phones than I've had. There's probably some little detail I'm missing. Yeah, it probably is. But in any case, folks, do come in, you know, and check us out on Sunday. 9:30, I'll be back. And Dennis has got a whole bunch of peculiar-looking Carlin on Campus coming up. And L-Top, Z-Top. He's got some old...
Might be tonight's Spotlight Group of the Week.
Could be some exciting songs coming up on Uncle Dennis's show, so... Do stay tuned. If you have any questions, comments, eruptions, donations, sexual favors, call me at 423-4833. I'm often available, but picky, if you know what I mean.
I'm not sure sex with you would be a favor.
we will let that comment pass. Again, the collective shall hear of your commentary, Dennis. Thanks for being with me on this edition of Bathroom Spears Broadsides. The show is archived at huffsantacruz.org, hopefully. And if not, well, we're all out of luck.
Sort of fade that down right there. Uncle Dennis in the hot seat here. Robert, of course, back on Sunday morning at 9:30, maybe earlier if he can bully his way into the studio at the ungodly hour of, what, 7:30?
Well,
8:30
perhaps.
Anyway, like I said, I'm Uncle Dennis. This is From the Cream to the Dregs, and we're here every week on Thursday evening at 8 o'clock to bring you rock and roll from the 60s and 70s. So, you know, just kick back, turn up the volume, and listen to free radio. Donate if you can. We're going to do a little live Iron Butterfly here. 19 minutes of In the Garden of Eden. Which, because they were slightly drunk at the time and stoned and blown away, came out to be Inagata De Vida.